Ringers.
People of Britain. This is your Prime Minister. Determined hand gesture, focused forehead, embarrassing plum suit. This week I have forcefully laid out the case for launching a full-scale attack on Iraq. It is because of the presence inside Iraq of an evil man, a man who has proved that his wickedness knows no bounds, and who must be targeted before he is allowed to carry out his terrible threats. And he is James Hewitt. Now that Rupert Murdoch has sent him there as a war correspondent, he's right out in the open where I want him. Nobody tries to sell my precious Diana's letters. She loved me, not you. Furious teeth, incandescent bald spot. There were three of us in this relationship, underpants.
You're listening to Today with me, John Humphreys.
And me, Sarah Montague. Mummy, if you're listening, thanks for a really scrummy Christmas break. Hugs from me and Piers.
Yes, the time is just coming up to the point where I don't give a damn anymore. Coming up later this hour, in aisle number four, McVitie's chocolate digestives are reduced to amazing 59p. And with prices like that, they won't last long.
While at 8:10, we'll be joined by the Prime Minister, and we'll be asking him whether he's got a club card and if he'd like cash back.
And we'll be reporting on the shock news that Walmart has given up trying to take over Safeways and they've bought the Today programme instead.
Yes, indeed. So as well as being Britain's leading current affairs programme, we're now also a branch of Asda.
In half an hour, I'll be speaking to John Prescott in the radio trolley, and after I've interrupted him twice, I'll interrupt him a third time completely free. As it's 3-for-2 on all interruptions on the show this week.
And don't forget, we've some amazing opening deals on Michael Portillo over there in the fresh fruit counter.
And look, there's Alistair Darling taking Britain's rail network into the 7 trains or less aisle. This is completely demeaning and insulting to a man of my intelligence.
Count yourself lucky, John. They've got me shelf stacking. And wouldn't you know it, I'm stuck with a weird employee that no one can understand.
Honey nut cornflakes. You know, down there opposite the Golden Grahams, madam.
Where must my journey take me, O wise wizard Gandalf?
Far, young hobbit, but it will be worth it. You must set out east from the elven fortress of Rivendell towards the dark forest of Envorn. There you will need great courage and skill as you traverse the great and treacherous River Anduin. Beyond that, you will enter the land of Endwath. For beyond that lies the bridge of Khazad-dûm and the fiery river surrounding Mount Doom of Mordor, and that is where your quest will be at an end.
And you're definitely sure if I go that way, I'll avoid the congestion charges?
Trust me, my brother's a taxi driver.
This is the BBC 10 o'clock news with me, Michael Burke. Fight and you'll never survive. Run and you'll never escape. More on that story later. But first this week, former Prime Minister Ted Heath has been giving evidence to the Savile inquiry.
Yes, it was one of the 1970s worst atrocities, and I deeply regret my part of it.
Eh, now then, goodness gracious, Sir Ted, eh? Jim will fix it, was not that bad. Eh? And I see you also would like me to fix it for you to discover the truth about the massacre of unarmed protests in Londonderry by British troops.
Oh, yes, I do.
Now, you see, the problem is Jim will fix it works on a very tight budget, so we have not been able to bring here today any senior Republican figures or retired British soldiers who witnessed those terrible events. But how instead would you like it if Jim fixed it for you to sing with Shawaddy Waddy? Or have a game of snooker with Cliff Thorburn, because he's available.
Mr. President, great news.
They're going to let me wear my Spider-Man costume the next time I address the UN.
No, not about that, sir. About Iraq. We won't need to invade after all. Saddam Hussein has come to his senses, given himself up, and he's come here to discuss terms.
That is peachy. Where is he?
I'm right here, Mr. President. Yes, it's me, Saddam Hussein, a.k.a. Sir Ian McKellen. If anyone's going to be your implausibly devilish nemesis out to destroy the world with his arsenal of fiendish weapons, it's going to be me.
Don't be so sure about that, McCallum.
Not you again, Rickman!
Yes, it's me, Alan Rickman. A.K.A. Osama bin Laden. If anyone is going to be the most hated megalomaniac villain on the face of the earth, then I am. I look mad, I can sneer, and I've even got my own beard.
Oh, but Americans find my long-flowing, voluminous caftan and astonishingly rounded vowels far more disturbingly foreign than yours.
Yes, but I'm far more dangerously extremist and anti-American than you.
You'll never get this role. Not if my rocket-powered nuclear camel has anything to do with it.
Well, I don't think you've taken into account the laser gun stroke beard trimmer under my coat.
My two token Arab supervillains have killer-fried each other. This is horrendoscope. I need someone foreign, evil, and beardy to distract people from the economic meltdown and all our other domestic problems.
Hello! I'm Fidel Castro!
BBC Radio 4, I'm Charlotte Green. What is Vavavoom? Me, that's what. And now, Alistair Cook's letter from America.
And as we watch the storm clouds gather in these dark, dark days... the concern amongst so many people who have spoken to me is that it won't be quick. And it will indeed turn out to be a long, drawn-out and messy. But as I said to Colin Powell, there's nothing much I can do about that. This is the way that letter from America always sounds. Good night.
I'm Trevor McDonald. And this is the ITV News. So light, it's the new service you can enjoy between bulletins. After the Queen complained of agonising knee pain earlier this week, Prince Charles immediately rushed her to the best hospital he could find.
So, what do you think her chances are?
Good day, Charles. Well... yeah, I think you've got little Queenie here to the animal hospital just in time. She's obviously just hobbling around a bit and in a little bit of pain.
All I'm interested in is, will she survive the operation and stay as queen?
Don't worry. In the right hands, she'll be up and about and racing round in no time and healthy enough to continue being our rule and sovereign for the next 20 years. Don't worry. I'll put my best bets on it.
No blast.
Well, good morning and welcome to Harare for this World Cup cricket match between Zimbabwe and England. You join us just in time for the official introductions, carefully planned to reflect England's disapproval of the Mugabe regime. There's Robert Mugabe now. He's going over to Nasser Hussein. Hussein offers Mugabe his hand. Mugabe goes to shake it. And then at the last minute, Hussein pulls his hand away. He puts his thumb on his nose and wiggles his fingers about. Vintage stuff, Fred.
Well, it certainly was, Henry, and, you know, I well remember offering a very similar token of disdain to President Mobutu in the 60s, you know.
Well, Mugabe moves along the line now, and next up is Alex Stewart. He offers his hand, Mugabe shakes it. Oh, and Stuart's got one of those electric hand buzzer things. Tremendous.
Didn't W.G. Grace do much the same thing to Napoleon during the 1810 Tour of Prussia?
Well, I believe he did, Fred. And so, with the formalities finished, the game has begun and... Oh, my word, England have already lost their first wicket. They appear to be playing in the most ludicrously half-hearted and incompetent manner possible. Do you think that's part of the protest, Fred?
No, Henry, I don't.
BBC Radio 3. Come on, feel the quiet. Now, this week I noticed that Roger Lewis, the head of Classic FM, said that the MTV generation, whatever that is, prefer shorter performances of classical music. Well, you know something, dear listener? I've got a terrible confession to make. So do I. Oh, yes. I prefer my classical music to be on the brief side, too. In fact, I find to my horror that after a little as a month into a piece, my mind starts to wander. In fact, I once played some Wagner at home that was a mere 17 hours long. Or as we call it in classical circles, a sample. But I did feel very, very dirty afterwards.
Hello, I'm David Dimbleby, and you join me for what promises to be a very somber day, one where the nation pauses as it says goodbye to one who meant so much to so many. And I can just see the funeral cortege approaching now from the distance, and their heads bowed in quiet.
Hey, what are you doing in our kitchen? My little Timmy's upset enough about his hamster dying. That you lot making such a song and dance about it.
No, please, let me commentate. I enjoy being sad and grave and speaking to the nation, and I won't get in the way. I'll just perch here by the cooker. You won't even know I'm here.
Come on, Timmy, let's get it over with.
So as Daddy places Mr. Nibbles into the shoebox... and a brave little 12-year-old boy wipes a solitary tear away, this truly is a moment to reflect, I think, on what this hamster meant to the nation. And joining me here in the kitchen with their recollections and memories are Sir Bernard Ingham, Lord St. John Stevens, and Sir Edward Heath.
Where the hell did they all come from?
Now, Sir Edward Heath, if I could start with you, did you know Nibbles well?
No.
Lovely, OK. Now, we've just time to cross to the front of the house where we can see Tony Blair frantically tapping at the window, trying to deliver his own heartfelt and emotional eulogy.
Did I tell you that he was the people's rodent?
Hello, the Royal Hotel.
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me?
Pardon?
Hello, I said, can you hear me?
Pardon?
Yes, I said, are you able to hear me as I speak unto thou?
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm speaking in connection with the Cobra exhibition at the Asian Art Museum presenting the impact of World War II on European art exhibition, which is to be held shortly in your town, apparently.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just wondering if you could give me some guidance on how I may do that.
I haven't got a clue.
Are you
travelling by car? Are you getting a train?
How does one get to Gateshead? This is what I wish to know. What is Gateshead? Is it clear?
Yes.
Oh. How does one go about getting to this town called Gateshead then? What must one do?
2 seconds. Hello?
Hello. I have established with the other lady that Gateshead is a town, apparently, and I now wish to ascertain a manner by which I can reach it so that I can see the Cobra exhibition of art. It should be here for me to see in London, but it's not, so I shall have to come to Gateshead, I suppose. Now, how can I do that?
Whereabouts are you now?
I'm in my home in the capital city.
You need to get a train.
A train? A train?
To Newcastle.
But I should have to share that train with members of the public.
Unfortunately, a lot of us have to do that.
But don't the majority of the general public have limited intelligence and a tendency to smell?
Yes, a lot of us do, yes.
Tell me something. When one arrives at Gateshead, what may one expect?
Lots of people from Gateshead.
Is it not inhabited by many Cro-Magnon cave dwellers and a landscape populated by woolly mammoths and Dinotheria.
No, no, that's Sunderland.
BBC Radio 4. I am Perkins of Borg. The headlines again. Her Majesty the Queen is now resting following the operation on her knee. In a statement, Buckingham Palace said the Queen got the injury after a stumble at Newmarket just before Christmas. No, she didn't. I did it. She was into me for a gambling debt, so I gave her a dead leg as a warning. She's lucky she didn't owe me as much as her mum did, because look what happened to her. No one crosses Brian the Gambler Perkins. No one. That's why in our house we're still eating bits of Shergar. And now, the Archers.
Oh, Eddie, what are you looking so miserable about?
Nothing, whatever is happening to us. By now, we should have been thrown out of Keeper's Cottage and been forced to live in Bert Fry's trousers. Or I should have found out that Hugh Grant is Edward's real father.
Well, it's not just Hugh Grant, is. None of us have got any storylines. Do you know I haven't had a woefully unfunny comic subplot involving an amateur theatrical production for months? You ask me, this is all down to that terrible new family that's moved in.
I can't think for the life of me why the Archers agreed to sell them Grange Farm.
Well, they didn't have any choice in the matter, that's why. You see, this isn't the Archers anymore. No, it's the Slaters now. Ain't that right, Big Mo?
Yeah, too right, Cat. Yeah, it's BBC policy now that not only do us Slaters have all the storylines in EastEnders, but we have to have all the storylines in all other BBC soaps as well. So you yokels better just get used to it.
Yeah, so now I'm having an affair with Eddie, who's cheating on me with the half-sister of Big Mo's cousin, who's blackmailing Brian over his affair with one of Joe's ferrets, who was really my daughter. And who's now run away to London with Ruth because she got hooked on drugs being sold to her by Linda to settle her debt with Siobhan, who's now pregnant with Gary's love child. Ain't that right, Lynn?
No more Gary, no, not more Gary. I love my Gary. I love my Gary.
This is terrible. They've turned our show into sensationalist trash like theirs.
Oh, well, it don't make no difference to me. I'm off.
Where are you going, Joe?
To OB City. She is also BBC policy and moves soap stars around to make all the shows look the same. I've just been appointed head surgeon there.
My name is Greg Dyke. And I... and Director General of the BBC. When I warned Leslie Ash to zip it, or I'd give her a fat lip, she should have realised how serious I was being. Right, now, 16 million people tuned in this week to see Richard, the serial killer Hillman, go mental and batter Emily and Maxine and leave them for dead. Now, I can't believe that I'm alone in finding this whole storyline highly distasteful, partially because it's crude, nasty and sensationalist, but mostly because I didn't think of it first. Right, so, from now on, all BBC staff will be issued with blunt instruments and are going to be given orders to sneak up on anybody on air at any time. It's brilliant. The nation will constantly be on the edge of their seats. Who's going to go next? Will it be Dale on the lottery? Soapy on the news? Dickinson on Bargain Hunt? Do you know, I wish I'd thought of this years ago. It would have saved me a fortune on Vanessa Feltz and Anthea Turner's severance pay. Oh, Yentob, put that strimmer down. I told you I was exempt.
And once again, you join me, David Dimbleby, for what promises to be a sombre occasion few of us will forget, as the nation bows its head in grief to pay its last respects to one who meant so much to us and the likes of whom we will not see again. And as Goldie makes his last journey and gets stuck there in the U-bend, and as the family frantically try to flush and flush and flush, to no avail, as he's well and truly wedged there, all that's left for me to say is that you really shouldn't do that with Labradors, you know.
Good evening, I'm Velvet Bragg. My hair is a Chessington World of Adventure for headlines. Welcome to the Roots of English. This week I've travelled to America to explore a strange dialect spoken by an incredibly small community in Beverly Hills.
Who the f*** are you and how the f*** did you get into my house?
Ozish. A curious hybrid of transatlantic American and expletive brubby.
Sharon, have you been putting acid in my f***ing tea again? I think I'm hallucinating. I keep seeing this vision of what my son will look like in 40 years' time.
Right, let's try now to hold a rudimentary conversation with him on a subject he'll understand. Good sir, I am feeling rather aggrieved with my situation, and to express my rage and frustration, I plan to remove the cranial region of an Astinobops macrotus using my upper and lower molars.
You'd be better off biting the head of a bat, mate.
Join me next week on The Roots of English when I'll be using Ozish to tell you just what I think of the BBC who forced me to take the TV version of this show to...
They sound like jolly annoying fellows.
Quick, get the pads! Hurry, Doctor, we're losing him!
Just quit your bellyache, you know, I'm the best surgeon you've had since that one made.
Well, if you're such a great surgeon, why are you having to open him up again?
Because I'm one ferret short, that's why.
Hello and welcome to Moneybox. I'm Alison Mitchell, one more Scottish Radio 4 voice in a sea of tartan annoyance. Today, we're going to try and go the whole show without mentioning pensions once. And our first caller is Brian from Very West Hampshire.
Hello, I got a question.
Right, and bearing in mind we're not going to be taking any questions at all about pensions, Brian, what's your question?
Oh, bye.
Right. Okay, so moving on to our second caller, it's Arthur from Whitstable. Arthur?
Hello. I'm a very old man, and I'm about to retire, so I'd like to ask a question about...
Yes, about what?
About... money matters.
Money, yes. Now, is that money in a pension sense of the word or money in a non-pension sense of the word? Next up, we have... No, it's all right, listeners. I think we're going to make it because our last caller is a little 9-year-old girl, Lisa from Derby. Now, what's your question, Lisa?
Well, I've saved up some pocket money and I don't know whether to spend it on some sweets or maybe buy my little brother a teddy bear for his birthday. On the other hand, would I be better off investing it in a commutation pension scheme?
Oh, and we were so close, so damn close. Join us again next week when Paul Lewis will be back with something of even greater interest to our listeners, death duties.
Hello and welcome to the 10 o'clock news with me, Michael Burke. I didn't want to retire, you know, but BBC One needed a new vehicle for Johnny Vaughan, and the 10 o'clock news was it. More on that story later. First, though, we cross live to Westminster and our chief political correspondent, Andrew Marr.
Michael, there are three questions that need to be answered here tonight. First, can war be avoided? Second, is there a timetable for an invasion already in place? And finally, why do I twitch about like a man who's just been dragged backwards in his underpants through a cactus patch?
Suddenly retiring takes on a whole new perspective for me. Good night.
New from BBC Enterprises, a tape that all lovers of classic comedy will treasure. Yes, it's Barry Cryer laughing filthily in the background of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. All your favourites are here, including Barry enjoying Graham Garden's late arrivals at the veterinarian's ball. And Barry relishing one of Humph's barely broadcastable Lionel Blair jokes. And why not try our Barry Cryer's Laugh instant playback facility while listening to other radio shows?
Ah, yes, and it'll be re. So indeed it was Handel and not Holst who wrote Water Music, a case methinks of you can take a Holst to water, but you can't make him compose.
Yes, it's the perfect way to make even the most buttock-numbingly dry and whimsical Radio 4 shows seem vaguely amusing. So buy Barry Cryer's Filthy Laugh now, and we'll throw in a copy of Barry listening to quote-unquote absolutely free.
I was sharing a pot of Earl Grey with Thora Heard just the other day when Home Secretary David Blunkett warned of the dangerous influences of gangster rap. Alan, Thora looked at me wistfully as her dentures clamped around the last of the Eccles cakes. That Mr. Blunkett talks a great deal of sense. We all know the dangers of being seduced by the evils of music, don't we? I nodded, and my mind was cast back to a warm July evening in 1999, when Thora, myself, Peter Salis, and Mr. Pettiford from Number 42 got into the hate-filled music of Ronnie Hazlehurst. Throughout the BBC, so solid Ronnie, as he was known, was notorious for his hard-hitting musical TV themes. They had to bleep every single word of his disgusting song, Blankety Blank. Thora became Ronnie Hazlehurst's lyrical accompanist and ho. Together they laid down the seminal underground club smash, Snack My Biscuits Up, and were indulging in casual lawlessness, hot-wiring tin baths on wheels without the owner's permission, and joyriding them down very steep hills. Soon, we were locked in a savage turf war with the cast of Heartbeat. Thora participated in a number of nasty drive-by stairlift incidents. And they, in turn, retaliated by throwing petrol bombs to the tune of an appropriate 60s hit. Sickened by the violence, Thora vowed to turn her back on popular music the only way she knew how, by becoming a presenter on Songs of Praise. But occasionally, the old Thora returns. So I gaze across the warehouse as Thora, with headphone clamped to one ear, mixing together All Things Bright and Beautiful with NWA. I say to P. Diddy, Snoop Dogg and Ice-T, they should renounce violence and join us in a rousing verse, and lo, he came with clouds descending. But of course they won't, will they? Selector.
You've been listening to Dead Ringers. It was performed by John Coleshaw, Jan Ravens, Mark Perry, Kevin Connolly and Phil Cornwell. It was written by Tom Jameson and Neff Fountain. John Holmes, Lawrence Howarth, Henry Naylor, Roderick Crooks and Colin Birch. The producer was Katie Tyrrell. It was devised by Bill Dare.